Hello and welcome to Insights, the CAE podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's recording. I hope everybody's staying safe and well in these strange times. This week's call is with William Kilbride of the Digital Preservation Coalition. William gave us some fantastic insights into digital preservation, the coalition itself, and how it supports the marketplace and the industry. So I hope this one people enjoy and one you can take some information away from. So thank you. William, so thank you. Really appreciate taking the time to join us today. It's great. Obviously, we've been working with Digital Preservation Coalition for a few months now, but it's good to really have a proper introduction and for you to help us understand a little bit more about the work you're doing. If you're okay, maybe just introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you very much, James, for the introduction and for the welcome you've given me and my colleague at the DPC to the work of CAE Systems. My name is William Kilbride. I am the director of this sort of slightly obscure little organisation called the Digital Preservation Coalition, which will probably be new to many of the people listening to the call. So it's great to be able to share some of that with you. The coalition is a membership organisation of just over 100 agencies around the world who are collectively working on this broad topic of digital preservation, which is something I'll go into in a moment. But we have recently established a new relationship with CAE Systems, with yourself and with colleagues, and it's great to be able to reach out to you and to spend some time just discussing the work of the coalition in return for the kind of hospitality you've shown us, describing and discussing and introducing the work of CAE, not just to myself, but to those members around the world that we also work with.
No, we absolutely appreciate it. I mean, we've enjoyed the engagement, and I think it's interesting because, again, it's quite unique, the coalition, that it is there trying to provide information, intelligence, research, knowledge to other organisations on a subject matter. The fact you're obviously a not-for-profit organisation, so it's very much about, again, elevating the conversation, so which we've appreciated. I mean, what's the overall ambition, I guess, with the coalition or the next steps ahead?
Yeah, for sure. So, I'll step back before I step forward. So the coalition is a membership organisation. It's a not-for-profit membership organisation. It was originally founded, it's been around a while, actually. So we were established in 2002 as a partnership between a group of agencies at the time who were all facing this broad challenge of digital preservation, which is the ability to manage information beyond the boundaries of technological obsolescence, media obsolescence, organisational change. So a broad range of challenges around digital preservation. So originally as a partnership between the British Library, the Public Record Office as it was then, National Archives of Scotland as it was then, a range of different agencies who were each of them collectively facing this challenge of trying to manage not just the bits and bytes, but also the meaning of that information through different generations of technology. And it's interesting to me that the early members of the DPC were all memory institutions, so the archives, the libraries that you'd expect that were facing this challenge of ensuring some kind of long-term access to information that they had for a variety of reasons, legislative, regulatory reasons, required to look after. But of course, what's become obvious is that this challenge of long-term access to information, this challenge not simply of the bits and bytes, but also the meaning and the structure and the authenticity of that information, that's a challenge faced now by very many organisations who have engaged with digital data, with digital systems, over the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 decades. And consequently, it seems to me that this digital preservation challenge has expanded. And it's expanded in terms of the number of agencies and the types of agencies that are engaged with it. And that comes back then to the coalition. So we're a not-for-profit agency. We have about 100 members around the world. Most recently, I think the most recent member was University of Adelaide, so really genuinely international. We are not-for-profit, and we don't have a technology, you know, so I'm not selling a solution here. What we try to do is to focus on best practice and, you know, the standards and the good practice that become standards. We focus on training and skills. We focus on policy development, awareness raising, and helping to build capacity through targeted pieces of research. But it's a small, quite unusual organization. We are technology neutral, vendor neutral. So, you know, people who come to the DPC, we're not going to sell them a technology explicitly. But what we do want to ensure is that our members, who are typically in the sort of, you know, what would you call it, the problem owners, I suppose you would say, those problem owners, they're looking for advice and guidance, and they're wanting to move forward as quickly as they can across this digital preservation piece. And of course, one of the ways of doing that is to ensure there's a healthy, lively, fast-growing marketplace for digital preservation solutions. So that's where we engage with CAE, with others, to help develop high-quality solutions and to help to connect this digital preservation marketplace together. So the role of the DPC really is about helping to build and develop a community of practice across the different sectors and the different agencies that need to be involved.
Fantastic. You obviously mentioned it started in sort of 2002, but as we have you noticed a real sort of elevation in maybe the task in the last couple of years? It seems to sort of become very prominent.
Absolutely, we have, James. And there's a couple of kind of benchmarks for me in relation to that. So one of them is the membership of the coalition. So that's a very obvious signal for me to quantify that. So we were set up, I think there were 16 agencies when we were set up. And actually, we were set up with the idea that we would work on this for about a year, and then after a year, it would all be well done, and we'd all back to our day jobs, you know. And I'm not sure whether, we're almost 20 years on, I'm not sure whether that would be considered a sign of success if it still exists. But in any case, so that we've grown, right? So we've grown not just in numbers, we've also really grown in diversity. So memory institutions have always been well represented, you know, the archives, the libraries, the museums, big representation from universities as well. But actually, over it's become more diverse. So I'm fond of telling people that Bacardi are a member of the DPC, and it's exactly the Bacardi you think it is, the drinks firm, you know, because they build infrastructure that has to last for several generations. Sometimes they, if you know, they want to sell bottles of whiskey to the Chinese market, they want to be able to demonstrate that it's 40-year-old whiskey. They don't want some customs officer questioning that, and of course they won't be hacking around in some legacy stock management system to try and prove that it is what it claims to be. We've been working recently with the nuclear industry, working very extensively with the banks, a whole range of different organizations which, when you think about it, they're all looking after data, or all have some responsibility, or can get some value out of data over an extended period of time. So absolutely growth in the digital preservation community, and actually becomes one of the challenges of the coalition, because as the community grows, so you have to work harder and harder to keep them together, you know, and to stop, you know, do it efficiently, so we're not reinventing the wheel, helping that dialogue, helping that good practice to grow. So it's very much been a growth area over the last few years.
What do you think has driven that sort of change of awareness and maybe customer type? Is it just like regulation and a greater, I guess, the data boom naturally means there's a lot more content to think about?
I think that's right. I mean, I think there are different drivers in different sectors, aren't there? And there's a bit of kind of horses for courses. So, I mean, certainly within, for example, there's been a lot of growth in the kind of research community of digital preservation. So what I mean by that is kind of university researchers, and there's new policies. Typically there's new policy that's driving that. Policy from government, policy from funders to look after data, so that not just you publish your journal article, but you also have to publish the data associated with it, and that creates a preservation requirement which might not have existed before. Now that's a kind of microcosm really of a range of types of regulatory environments which have emerged over the years and which are bringing that digital preservation need to a larger group of people. So similarly in the banks, similarly in some of these other regulated sectors, what you see is a real need and real demand for being able to provide access to data for, we say data for the long term, but of course that long term is quite short now. You know, it seems to me that the data has, you know, you measure it in doggy years, don't you? I mean, it's quite a short life cycle relative to what we might historically have understood. It's not a surprise that archives came to this problem first, but I think everyone has something, some kind of skin in the game as well. So we've got, on one hand, you've got the regulation, you've got all that kind of coming in. Secondly, I think there is also the data boom. You know, data is growing in volumes, but it's also growing in complexity, and it's growing, I think, in expectation. People are looking for more out of their data, and all of those things, I think, all people to more sophisticated need terms of data preservation, beyond just storage. You know, there's more to this than simply storage. It's also about authenticity, also about documentation to make that data useful and accessible for future generations.
And are you seeing people, I guess, contributing more to the question and the answer now, rather than just asking you the question, if that makes sense?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And in some senses, we've never had the answer. Do you know, it's a funny thing to say, but actually the strength of the coalition is its membership. So as the membership has grown, so better and more complete answers emerge as we go. So there's been absolutely a real boom, I think, in terms of the capacity of the community to address some of these issues. What is striking, though, is that just as you think you've answered the question, so it changes again, you know, because there are drivers outside of our control. So, you know, the drivers, in, for example, in technology are out of control of the DPC, you know. So we need to adapt and constantly be readdressing our solutions and our answers. A case in point. So there's been a lot of research around, for example, the archiving of websites. So there's a very established infrastructure now for web archiving. And it's really great if what you want to do is to capture an HTML page and store it as a work in a work file, which is a particular type of way of storing web crawls. But like web pages are no longer simply HTML documents, you know, it's a complex interplay of personalization, of scripts, of all sorts of different, you know, material which draw data sources, data streams that are pulled together for one's experience online. So there's a change there. And the point is that the dramatic change in the technology that, for example, in this case drives websites, is a dramatic change, therefore also a paradigm shift in how we need to think about how we do preservation. And you can play that over and over and over again. The cloud computing, the introduction of building information management systems. Every sector, every field that you work in, you see those subtle changes and complexities that drive the need for greater and more sophisticated preservation solutions.
You mentioned technological sort of obsolescence a little bit earlier. Do you think technology companies are keeping up with the problem in sense of, you know, providing the solutions to underpin the requirement, or is that still a sort of work in progress?
It's always a work in progress, I think. there's certainly more commercial support to this than there was historically. Yeah. So a few years ago, James, we would have had this conversation. I may as well set my hair on fire as point you to any practical working commercial solutions, because there weren't any. But now there are. And in fact, what we see in the coalition, and CAE is a good example of it, of big technology companies, established technology companies, coming to this and realizing themselves that not only have they got, you know, kind of sort of an inch in this in a commercial sense, but it's actually adds value to their business model, adds value to what you do in terms of the day-to-day, you know, the live data as much as it is for the archival or kind of historic data. So yes, there's been a real growth of commercial support to this, and I think a real growth then of the kind of the marketplace. I've used that phrase before, but a marketplace for digital preservation solutions, which incidentally also isn't just a single, it's not just like you buy a product and that's that. It's increasingly, I think, an interplay of, for example, storage providers, people with expertise in, for example, social media, people with expertise in different parts of the puzzle working together. So quite a sophisticated and established marketplace is emerging.
And again, does that sort of drive the ethos, I guess, at you being a coalition? Because again, it's just using the play on the word, you know, it's about drawing things together at all times.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, maybe it's such an obvious to say, but it's to me that no single person has an answer to all the different parts of this puzzle. You know, it might be that for a very simple data type or for a very simple type of storage that everyone would be able to, you know, you'd be able to have a comprehensive solution. But to be honest, it requires more and more interplay of kind of complicated and connected parts in order to be able to deliver a preservation solution. So bringing those together is really the job of the DPC.
Absolutely. So, and maybe a bit less about technology, but more about people. We're seeing certainly roles we didn't notice existed a couple of years ago. So the whole digital preservation manager or project manager associate purely to digital preservation seems to be more, you know, more widely advertised and more widely sort of coveted. Are you seeing that sort of creation of new roles, particularly in this space?
Yes, we are. I'll tell a whimsical story that rather than kind of the the detail here, but you know, a few years ago, one of our members approached us and asked if we could advertise a job for them, because we've got this good network, could we advertise a job? And we're happy to do that. And of course, that's resulted in us now running a vacancy service, and it's amazing to me. It's strange, can you look at the web stats for our website, and actually it would appear to me that the digital preservation community at large spends, I mean, there's lots of great resources on the DPC website, but the number one most popular one is the jobs vacancy section, which suggests that if you work in digital preservation, you spend quite a lot of your time looking for your next job. I'm being facetious, of course I am. But yes, there's been a real growth in that market. And again, it's one of the sort of strange and unusual roles of the DPC has been helping people to write those job descriptions and then helping to promote those job descriptions to quite a small specialist audience of skilled individuals who can meet those requirements. So there's, you know, maybe 200 jobs a year now advertised on the DPC website. That's not huge in terms of the economy, but it's extraordinary in comparison to where we were maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah.
In terms of this profile,
and especially considering it's you know, I'm off behind the curve, but it still is an emerging area, and again, the acceleration has been so quick, so recently.
Exactly.
I can imagine why people are looking, because from our perspective, the projects are very, very compelling. You know, it's an interesting thing to be resolving. You say, I know there's lots of commercial entities looking at these projects, but you know, it is compelling to be associated to a heritage related project and thinking you're supporting, you know, national heritage or sort of, as you say, the sort of someone advocated, well, put it very well to me recently, that effectively we're all custodians of the information. So it's an importance to understand that, and actually none of us own it. It's all about thinking of future generations. And as you say, you can look back at that data and prove how it was recorded and why it was stored in a certain fashion. And you can, you know, re-edit as you might need to. But it does become very compelling a space and a conversation to have when it's, you know, it's less bits and bytes and it's more about the content so important.
Yes, absolutely it does. And you know, one of the things that you get into digital preservation, you can sometimes be fooled that the technology drives everything forward, and the technology is really important. You can't proceed without it. But actually, you need to be asking questions around what's the value of the data, and the value of the data is actually then expressed as things like opportunities. What can you do with the data? What can you do with the data that you couldn't do before? And so keeping a very kind of clear perspective on what we want to achieve with the data becomes, it helps frame the whole of the policy environment that we operate in.
No, absolutely. I what motivated you in this direction? Because you came from a sort of more archaeological sort of background from memory. So I just, how did you move across?
Well, interesting one. And by the way, I think a lot of people have found their way into this space, and you're very welcome. Everyone else at CAE is very welcome to join this space from whatever background, because it requires many different eyes on it. So I'm an archaeologist by training. That's surprising to find myself working in digital preservation. And again, whimsically, you know, when you work in archaeology in Scotland, James, really all your career, entire career goal is something warm and dry indoors as a job.
So it's all about comfort.
But no, I mean, so archaeology, remember, archaeology is a kind of interesting discipline, but one of the characteristics of archaeology is that the process of archaeological excavation is very destructive. So what archaeologists love to do is to systematically dismantle the historic environment, because it's called research, you know?
Yeah.
And it's an unrepeatable experiment. You excavate a site, you can't excavate it. So the record of the excavation is vitally important. So archaeology's always had a big archival component to it, and organisations like English Heritage have enormous archives actually behind them. But that's what got me into digital preservation. So I did an unusual set of qualifications, which were in combination of computing and archaeology. I kept trying to avoid the computing part, kept trying to get back into the archaeology, but of course those computing skills were very much in demand. And what I realised, and I'm doing this kind of on my own really, but I realised I was doing an awful lot of what I would now call data management, or what you would now call kind of preservation, because you would have an archaeological team. They would go out in the summer, they would spend 3-4 months on an archaeological site doing the excavation. They would have other records to maybe in, I don't know, DBase 2 or some sort of exciting program like that, and they would bring it back, and then they would work on it a little bit over the winter months, and you know, then the university was at Glasgow University, the university would upgrade DB4 or something, you know. And you feel like, hang on a minute, we've got this site which we're excavating. It's going to take 15 years to do the excavation. We're going to have to produce the records at the end of that still. Yeah. So I was doing a bunch of what you call migration or research data management. And actually, that turns out to be core to a lot of the digital preservation work. So by hook and crook, I found myself doing less and less of the archaeology and more of the digital preservation side of things. So I suppose the allure of a warm, dry job indoors got me in the end.
So ultimately, you've lived it. You've lived the migration, the data change. That's
well,
quite something.
Exactly. Very practical. And listen, a lot that again slightly whimsical, but actually a lot of people who found their way into digital preservation have found their way through unusual routes, you know, because it's not a career choice. When I was doing my taking my options at school, it didn't appear anywhere as one of the kind of career goals you could ever, because it didn't exist. What we now have, thankfully, is a generation now coming out of university with master's programmes in digital curation, or archivists with specialisms in digital preservation, or a variety of other kind of curator and computing science roles which emphasise digital preservation as a skill set. So it's something you now can learn in university or can learn through formal education rather than an amateur like myself trying to kind of make up solutions as we go in the early 90s. And that's the other thing to say, archaeology, by the way, archaeology in the early 90s, super excited about every new technology, super excited about trying every possible new skill and every possible new tool, but without necessarily the capacity to preserve the data that we were producing afterwards, you know.
Well, that's amazing. So, funnily enough, my next question was going to be how would you, if somebody was encouraged to want to work in the field, what you'd recommend? But I guess there are appropriate degrees now, and the experience of being out there and maybe living some of this as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, yeah, going to an archaeology degree might not be the answer you expect, but there are qualifications, so you can do that sort of thing now. But the practical skill, the hands-on practical work is really what makes the difference, you know. So encouraging people not simply to, so you know, there are formal qualifications, there are career development opportunities as well. That's one of the things actually the coalition promotes and provides and supports. But the practical hands-on experience is as always gold dust, isn't it, in every career and every profession. So encourage people to look at how they can develop that hands-on practical capability too.
No, fantastic. And just, I guess, a couple of last questions for me. I've noticed, because you guys are very, very sort of prevalent on social media, and there's a real sense of sort of social conscience amongst the posts. You know, you guys are very sort of, aware of what's going on constantly around you. So it's never looking backwards, it's always looking forwards from the posts I see. Does that sort of run through this DPC? It's a sort of that sort of culture of, of innovating and keeping on top of the times and sort of being amongst what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to be, and we recognise kind of our moment in history, kind of unusual, kind of, because it's like a profession which is emerging, kind of completely new. So there are two or three aspects to that. I mean, one of them is to recognise that, the skills that we have now are not going to meet the needs for the future, and that what we have now, it might be good for now, but there's constantly emerging barriers to reuse. In the context, for example, of technology or organisational change. So we need to be kind of constantly renewing our own, you know, commitment to renewing our own skills and our own capabilities. There's also, candidly, a kind of aspiration to attain and to establish the kind of relevance of what we do. So, we have this conversation sometimes with, maybe not so much with yourselves at CAE, but, you know, you have a conversation with maybe a parliamentarian, and you can't explain what it is you're trying to do. Well, you need to find the right words, you need to find the right clarity of expression to help them understand what it is that we do, in order that we can help lower the barriers to what would be reasonable preservation actions. And because it's new, because it has this kind of, in many cases, unfunded mandate to just go on and do some of this, we have to spend a lot of time on advocacy. So that I think you would find people who work in digital preservation, you know, I think it's Adrian Brown at Parliamentary Archives reckons that he spends about 30% of his time actually just constantly going over the advocacy piece, reminding people why this matters, reminding the people of what they do, also reminding people the impact of inaction and what the consequences of that might be. So there's a real advocacy piece to the digital preservation community, and it probably lends itself there to folk like me with an opinion on everything, in order to get that worked out.
I'd say we do speak to quite a lot of customers where there's that one person in whatever organisation it might be that really wants to press this as a path and sees the necessity. But again, as they come back to that, they have to sort of reiterate why, and especially if it involves a budget. So it's, you know, it's something fresh or something new and to understand. Probably my last question, really. So what comes next for DPC? Because I say we've sort of felt with the sense of, you know, you consistently keep innovating and keep on top. I have to say, anybody who hasn't been to your website, the level of information you produce and share and, you know, commit to. And again, there's always a vibe. There's always something happening. There's always a sense of, you know, can be quite a low key event. There's always an event or an agenda to keep people sort of involved. It's quite a workload. I mean, just keeping that energy up all the time. So it's what's next, I suppose.
Yeah. No. Well, first of all, I appreciate your kind words there, James. I mean, it is effort, but there is always a vibe. And the Coalition is a fantastic little organisation to be associated with, and I really enjoy it. And I realised, and again, so speaking personally here, I realised that digital preservation engages me as a topic because it has this constantly evolving character. But it's the Coalition part that I think I get my energy from, really, because it's like, you know, the network is really, really valuable. What's next for the DPC? Well, I mean, there's in the immediate horizon a few things to alert listeners to. So just later this month, we're going to be releasing what we call a procurement guide. So one of the, you know, we've go through iterations here, you can imagine it. So the first stage in digital preservation is admitting that there's a problem, you know, it's kind of like, you know, stages of grief or something like that. You have to admit that there's a problem. You do the advocacy bit, which is about trying to raise awareness, and then you do the kind of cost modelling bit, so there's a kind of costing piece, and then there's a procurement piece, you know, because you have to buy a solution. So our members, many cases, have gone through those stages, and they've repeatedly asked us for help with procurement. So we've done a lot of procurement work. So we've been there. You maybe have a big organisation, maybe one digital preservation expert, and so, you know, we've joined them to help support their kind of insight as an independent reviewer. So we've written that up, and that's coming out later this month as a new guide and stuff, and I'm quite excited about that. But actually looking to the longer horizon, so 2020 is an awards year. So every 2 years we run a thing called the Digital Preservation Awards, and we came close to cancelling it this year because, you know, coronavirus and lockdown and everything was just kind of getting too much for us. But we decided just to throw our hats over the wall, give it a shot. So we're running the Digital Preservation Awards this year. We've just opened the call for proposals, and we look for nominations sort of early to mid-August from people who are doing good work in digital preservation, so we can celebrate it, you know, because a lot of this work is not celebrated. It doesn't have much profile, so let us take the role of helping develop that profile and to celebrate the really clever, creative solutions, ideas, also the training programs, also the student work, also the work in industry, the work across a range of different sectors to help develop solutions to digital preservation. So that's, I mean, to think about our workload just now, procurement guide coming up, also the Preservation Awards in the near horizon, but we're constantly generating new suggestions, new ideas. Perhaps it's a weakness, but as the DPC is growing, 100 or more members now means 100 or more different ideas in everything. So there's plenty there to keep busy, I'm sure.
No, fantastic. I mean, again, from CAE and the team here, we've nothing but infused and nothing but grateful, actually, for the patience you give to all the members, because you give us an awful lot of information and an awful lot of time. So I'd certainly encourage anybody on the outside who hasn't engaged, you know, should, and, you know, yourself and Sarah do a fantastic job, make sure everybody gets the support and help they need. So it's really gratefully received.
Well, that's wonderful again to you, James. And let me just emphasise that to anyone listening in, you know, be assured of a warm welcome in the Digital Preservation Coalition, but also in the community more generally. It's a fab little corner of the world to be working in, so all are welcome.
No, that's fantastic, and probably a perfect place to end, William. So I'm really grateful for your time. It's been, you know, really good to hear from you, really good to get that sort of information and insight.
Cheers. Sure thing. Well, thank you very much for that, James. I appreciate the invitation very much.
Thank you.